Great friends, on Monday afternoon, we come to you from a variety of different spots around San Diego. I'm in Solana Beach in our podcast den. Both Alex and John are both in separate locations in North Park, closer to downtown San Diego. And I will tell you guys right now, I don't know what the date is. I mean, I think I know what today's date is, June 1st. I usually like to start with the date, the episode number that we're on, and the day that we are currently in quarantine. And I don't know those statistics right now, and they're not even urgent to me. I swear to you guys right now, for those of you that are just coming into our YouTube chat, for those of you that are getting onto our Facebook page, for those of you that are listening at a different time or watching at a different time, I'm telling you right now that I almost called these fellas and said, let's bail on today. Let's just bail on today because I'm just too upset and emotional about everything that happened. But, you know, I've got this philosophy just drilled into my brain. The show must go on, and it will. And coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk to Shelley Zimmerman, who is the former chief of police here in San Diego, about all the stuff that went on around, not just in our city, not just in our county, but all over America. And as you can see right here, I'm wearing this t-shirt. I know you guys have them as well. La Mesa, we are a community. Hey, I don't care if it's La Mesa, if it's Minneapolis, if it's Chicago, if it's Atlanta, if it's Los Angeles, we, America, our community, and my God, we're hurting bad right now. We are hurting really, really bad. Now, look, maybe it's just me. I will admit, my girlfriend was out of town this weekend, which freed me up, and I spent an awful lot of time in front of a TV. And I made sure I went from CNN to Fox News, because if I say CNN, half of you get pissed off. So I watch both. I watch both just to make sure that I see it coming from opposite perspectives. What I saw this weekend is it's sad. It's terrifying. It's mind-blowing. And I'm impacted. I mean, I am physically and emotionally impacted by what happened this past weekend. And, you know, if for those of you that were with us last week, we had on one of my old college teammates who's a former NFL GM who's moving into the media business. His name is Doug Whaley. We had this conversation. I don't see you as being black and me as being white. I see you as my brother. You see me as your brother. That's what sports does for people. It allows people to say, I don't care that he's black and he doesn't care that I'm white and we come from different worlds and we have different opinions about things. He's trying to win. I'm trying to win. We got a common goal. We're brothers. That's how I've always believed sports beats racism. That has always, always been my philosophy. When I was in high school, I went to a predominantly white high school. They bust in just a few black guys. And guess what? Those black guys were pissed. They weren't happy because they were at the all white high school and all their buddies were going to the all black high school. And whose team do you think was better? Okay. And those guys, but I learned from them and they learned from me. And when I got to college, a kid who went to a predominantly white high school and had 6 or 7 or 10 black teammates, when I got to college and like 65% of the guys were black, I learned from them. They learned. I was the first Jew that so many of my black teammates ever met in their life. I taught them. They taught me. Sports has always for me beaten racism. That's how you learn from one another to not see black and white. What I saw this past weekend was so upsetting, was so physically and emotionally upsetting to me. And I honestly thought maybe we should not go on the air today. I thought this morning when I went on KUSI News, maybe I shouldn't go on KUSI News. I'm physically distraught with everything that happened. La Mesa, California, a suburb of San Diego, in Southeast San Diego, where, by the way, I kind of think of La Mesa, California as being like 95% white, seriously. And when I saw this town, places I've been in, Target, Vaughn's, the Chase Bank, I not that I've been in these places, but I know where they are. I've driven there. I've done broadcasts out there. I've shopped out there. It's set, you know these places. And when you see a bank burned to the ground, when you see a lady with some kind of a rubbery bullet in her forehead lodge, you go, what the hell is happening in our country, in our city, in our county? And then just to really make it worse for me, this is for me. I must live under a rock, man. You'll have to excuse me. this weekend, when I start hearing about these groups that are far left and they're trying to upset the balance, and this, there's political stuff going on. We're going to make Trump look bad, and we're going to get him out of office, and we're going to pay people to loot and riot. And I'm like, whoa, 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 hold on. Like, there are peaceful people out there that are saying, I'm hurt because this black man was killed by four cops and I'm really hurting. And now all of a sudden I'm talking about looting and property damage and fires and violence. The violence that I have seen from human beings this past weekend. What the fuck? What, do we live in Game of Thrones? Are you serious? The violence that I have seen. So as you can feel my energy, I mean, it's hard. It is hard right now. And the one thing I decided was, though, is this. We must get on the air for this reason. I've received so many texts and tweets and Facebook messages from people that said, we need your leadership. And I go, me? What, my leadership? What do you mean? People need a voice, not mine. Not people need multiple voices to say, look, people, we got to figure something out here. We've been trying for years and years. Martin Luther King was in the 60s. We're talking 50 years plus later. We're still having the same problems, and it's time, and it's been time. And if good comes from this, wonderful. But looting and rioting and violence and destruction is not the answer. I will hold on to that. And let me just say this. I feel terrible for business owners. You were out of business for the last 80 plus days. You were looking forward to reopening. You were going to try and jumpstart your business, and now it's burned to the ground. I mean, I am feeling for people, black, white, male, female. It doesn't matter where you're from. It doesn't matter how old you are. I mean, I see a cop in Flint, Michigan say, hey, I put down the baton. I put down the gun. Let's march. Let's walk. I feel terrible for everybody who, like me, is hurting today. That's what I wanted to say. Good afternoon, Grande. Good afternoon, Browner. I'm sure both of you guys, being younger and Hispanic and black, I'm sure you guys come at this from a very different experience than I do. Grande, good afternoon. What is your first thought?
I just think there's a lot of really brave people out there that care about the real issue. And that's just minorities being treated unfairly in this country. And you know, I didn't participate in any of the protests. I didn't participate in any of the marches or anything like that. So I'm not going to pretend to know what happened out there. I will just say that we can't lose track of what really happened in Minneapolis, and we can't let the story be the rioting and the fighting and the violence. You know, what are we doing this for? Obviously there's bad people doing things that you shouldn't be doing, but I just always bring it back to what started all this, and how are we going to get better from that incident and many, many, many other incidents that happened before George Floyd's murder. I get it. People in the media business have to sell ratings. They got to put the stuff that's crazy on the news. They got to do what they got to do to get their shows up. But if you really look online, you see the peaceful protests that have happened in countless cities, including my hometown of Oxnard, where there's not a large black population there, but we know all about what happens to minorities, especially Hispanics. So it's like, I'm proud to say that my hometown is participating in this peacefully so far. I just don't want to forget that, you know. I don't want people to forget what we're doing this for. And I get it, man. It's fucked up what happened in La Mesa. That lady, that picture, it's terrifying, man. Like, it's scary when you are out there, but I also think there's a lot of good happening right now, a lot of good. And I'm not saying that the rioting, the violence, the protest is good. No, I'm saying that there's a lot of peaceful things that are happening out there. You're seeing moments, you're seeing pictures, you're seeing videos, a silent protest in front of City Hall and on the waterfront yesterday. You know what, how it escalated? Yeah, it escalates. And why you think it escalates? Who knows, man? I don't give a shit what Donald Trump says, who he's blaming. There's bad people out there. There's agendas out there. That's always going to happen. But I don't want to forget what we're doing this for. And if I have this small platform to say, it's like, you know, let's not forget why we're doing it. To end racism fucking once and for all, man. Like, what is the point? John's black. I'm Mexican. You're white. Who gives a shit? We're all in this together. We got to live our life day by day together. And that's it.
Amen to that, brother. I got to tell you, you know, it's so interesting, because for the last 75 plus days, All we've been talking about is coronavirus. We were talking about, oh my God, it's out there. Let's quarantine. Let's stay home. Wait a second. Things are loosening up. Do I need a mask? Do I not need a mask? Restaurants are opening up. And people were worried, oh my God, there's going to be a second wave of coronavirus. Well, if there's a second wave of coronavirus, all the people that went out on the streets this past weekend, I understand why you were there. But if one person has it in Minneapolis and one person has it in Atlanta and one person has it in Chicago and another dude has it in LA, and then all of a sudden the corona spreads even more, we will know that, you know, we have another wave, another real problem. But I got to say, nobody cares about coronavirus right now. And I actually applaud you, Alex, for bringing it back, because that to me is what's being missed here. It is about George Floyd. It is about a man struggling for his life. It is about indecent human beings on top of him. And for 9 minutes, when they should have known after 4 minutes, hey, he's good. All right, he's subdued. We're good. Let's put him back in the car and let's move on with our lives. These guys not only destroyed their own individual lives, they destroyed the life of Floyd, his family, and they have now destroyed a lot of America with their terrible, just absolutely intolerable behavior as police officers. And what I have found super interesting is the chief of Minneapolis on live television on CNN yesterday saying that was murder, was fascinating. To have the family ask a question through a reporter on live television was amazing. And even earlier in the day today, to have the family saying to the world, stop the violence now. Okay. I just appreciate that message. Now, all of this, I have to say good afternoon to John, who I checked on early this morning. And I said, hey, how are you? Are you okay? What happened to you in your life this past weekend? Say good afternoon to Browner, who, you know, everybody is going to have some strong feelings today.
I mean, I have a million things to say, but I'm going to keep this shit real short. I'm going to keep it straight to the point. As a black man, I'm 38 years old. I'm going to say this one time. Stop fucking burning shit. Stop breaking shit. Stop turning over cars. Okay. That ain't never stopped a black man from being killed by the goddamn police. Okay. You might have broke a window. That ain't going to stop the next Sandra Bland from dying in a prison. You might have turned over a car. That's not going to stop the next Eric Garner from being choked on a street corner for selling loose cigarettes. Okay. What you need to do for every person out there with enough energy and fight to march, this is what I'm going to ask that you do. One of y'all run for mayor, three of y'all run for city council, and 20 of y'all apply to be police officers. If it's 1,000 of y'all out there, okay? A small percentage of that will get through. That is how you change things, okay? Stop trying to change things by burning shit down, because all that shit is insured. It will be back, okay? These people, George Floyd, ain't coming back. Sandra Bland ain't coming back. Eric Garner ain't coming back. Every time you burn something, you're hurting the memory of these people, because you give the other side the ammunition that they need to say, see what happens? This is why this happens. This is why police do this. This is why police do that. Thank God for the cell phone, because if it wasn't for this, the media would tell you that there are people out there breaking windows, that there are people out there rioting in the street. But when the sun's up, you notice that are peaceful people marching in the street. For once, they even got cops to join in, because this shit is so egregious, okay? Stop breaking and burning things. It doesn't work, okay? We are here burning shit now because the last time we burnt shit, you got nothing out of it but another dead man, 10 minutes murder all over social media, okay? Take it from me. You will never see me marching anywhere, because that shit ain't gonna solve nothing but hurt your back and your feet. I get your message. I really do. I stand by you. I'm in solidarity. I'm there with you. But what you need to understand is the way to change the system is to get within it. You're not going to topple that empire from the outside, burning cars and breaking windows. You have to get in it and show them that you, again, cannot hate a person close up. That's how you fix this. That's how we right this ship. Until then, we will be burning and breaking shit until the end of time in this country, and we do not need that.
I'm destroyed. I mean, I got to be honest with you guys. I'm freaking destroyed over this whole thing. And I don't know how long I can go today. I really don't. For us, there's only one thing I think we can do. And that is, we've got to use our platform every day now to try and help fix. Some days it may be just having a good time and laughing and talking about sports. And other days it might be having on like Shelley Zimmerman, who's coming up in a matter of moments. Tomorrow we're going to bring on James Blake. James Blake was a tennis star, number 4 tennis player in the world, light skinned black man, good looking, Harvard educated tennis player. He's standing in front of a hotel in New York City, gets tackled by a cop, put into handcuffs, and only to find out mistaken identity. And went on to sue the New York Police Department. He's got a strong opinion about a situation like this. And trust me, James Blake may not have grown up the same way you grew up, John. You know, he didn't, I don't think he grew up in the tough streets of Chicago. I think he kind of grew up in the country club of Connecticut, you know,
right.
But he's still black.
Right. Okay?
And I'm telling you right now that white America is in many, many, many instances standing with black America, upset about all of this. But there are still lots of different feelings out there. I'll just to give you one example, Alex, you said you're proud of your hometown. I was embarrassed by my hometown. I live in North County, San Diego, predominantly white. These white girls made a beautiful, ugh. Oh my God, a beautiful, like artistic, wall, if you will, of all the names of black folks who've been killed over the years in police incidents, right? And they brought it to the Cardiff Kook, which is a very famous landmark up in this part of the county. And last night or two nights ago, they actually had video of a white woman showing up and literally physically vandalizing this beautiful art that these folks had created, where they wanted to have a peaceful protest. And they wind up having this protest eventually, by the way. It's all white people. Just so you know, it's all white people. No black people, all white people saying, we stand with black America, saying this is no longer tolerable. It wasn't tolerable 6 weeks ago. It's still no longer tolerable, but we've all exploded now. Could it be Corona? Could it be the economy? Could it be dead black man on the streets of Minnesota? Could it be all of it together exploding? Perhaps. But to see a white woman come up to other white people and tear down the work that they've created so that they can create a peaceful protest and say the things that this woman was saying, like, this is all about political groups and you're buying into all of this. I mean, I was so humiliated for this person and for the community, the neighborhood. I mean, look, it's just, I'm telling you guys right now, especially when you have, like, I'll just tell you, you know, John, you're going to have black kids who are going to, you're going to have to tell those black kids your experience growing up. I have to tell my white kids my experience growing up. My kids, I can see them posting all over social media, heads down, hands raised, people on knees. They're very supportive. My kids don't know the difference between black and white, and they're mostly around whites and Asians, frankly. But this what is going on in our country is just so hurtful. And it doesn't, for me, I don't care how old, I don't care what your race is. You have to be hurt by what you're seeing. And I'm just devastated by the whole thing, man. I really am.
It's sad. It's sad, man. The part about this woman tearing up another person's right to empathize and feel the pain of others is what's really embarrassing. She could have her own views and she can do her anti-protest across the street, because that's what this country is based on. People being able to agree to disagree. But to destroy someone else's work because you believe that, oh, it's all political, then you are actually going against what you're trying to accomplish, because you're telling the person their voices cannot be heard. So why should your voice be heard if you think it's fake over their voice if they think it's real?
I know, it was embarrassing. I mean, it really was. It was terrible. I just got to say, though, I mean, I'm John, I think you brought up the strongest point today, which is this. People, please stop. Please stop
doing that.
Because I'll tell you right now, and I will tell you this, as much as I sound sympathetic, like, oh my goodness, your business was closed for 90 days and then you were hoping to get it back and then your business got burned to the ground. If these businesses, Vaughn's, Chase Bank, Walmart, Target, you've done the destruction, you've stolen the goods, okay? And if you think you've hurt them, you haven't. Because
not at all.
They're gonna get their insurance money, but you know who you've hurt? You've hurt the employees. You know, mm-hmm. you've your point is really well said. White America will look at black America like, hey, piss off black America. They'll throw rocks through windows. That's not the answer. And by the way, I got to tell you something. I saw so many kids this weekend on video throwing rocks, stealing shit, all white kids who I look at and I go, I don't think this is your George Floyd protest. This is you showing up to steal some Adidas. Some idiot, some freaking moron. I can't wait till they get this guy. Live on television. I swear to God, live on television. Camera is placed. There's no reporter. They're just showing you the action. These two white dudes show up, pull up to a curb. Their freaking license plate and their car is right there for the whole world to see. These two idiots get out of the car, jump into this Nike store or the Adidas store, jump out, throw a whole bunch of crap in the car and zoom off. Their license plate there for the whole world to see. Okay? They're pieces of garbage. White guys, and respectfully, how about the black guy leaving the La Mesa Target or whatever with bottles of alcohol in his hands? You know, garbage. I don't care if you're black or white. If you're stealing, if you're looting, if you're doing destruction in the name of George Floyd or in the name of Antifa, what I'm just learning, whatever your agenda is, hurting people's business, hurting people's lives, destroying their property, hurting people's physical body, absolutely unacceptable, particularly in freaking 2020. This isn't World War II. This isn't Japanese in concentration camps or Jews in Europe. We're not locking up millions of people at once. The violence and the stealing and the destruction, I just can't. I can't. I'm beside myself.
I think you're not alone, man. I mean, it's, you know, there's going to be reactions about everything because this country's split down the middle like crazy. But I mean, you're not alone in that. People get more pissed off about the rioting and the looting than they do get pissed off about the killings, you know, like,
right.
You should be equally, not even close to equally as upset about Avon's getting broken into. You should be super pissed off that an innocent man was murdered by a cop. You know, like I get it. And but that's the thing that strikes me the most about this weekend is how like that's taking over the news.
That's what Browner's point is, though.
That's what I was trying to say earlier is like, you let's not forget what started this. Let's not forget why we're doing this, why people are doing. I'm not doing it. Why people are doing it. So
but that was Browner's whole point. You go and do all this destruction, it takes away from the story. Yep. And it takes away from the man, and it takes away from others before him. That's the way I feel about it. All right, let's have a really candid conversation with Shelley Zimmerman. Let me tell you that, look, we're talking to a cop here. You know, we're talking to a former chief of police. We're talking about a woman who decided she was going to become a cop to earn enough money to go to law school. She decided not to go to law school. She loved being a cop. She liked being on the streets. She liked making an impact in the community. She rises all the way to chief of police, and now she is retired as chief of police. But she's a cop for life. And, I mean, guys, I'm going to tell you right now, say what you want to say. Talk to her about what you want to talk to her about. Don't hold back. Try and be as quote unquote respectful, but feel free, gentlemen, to bring your perspectives to this conversation. Here is our conversation with Shelley Zimmerman. Oh, listen, let's jump right into it. Shelley, I said it this morning on local TV, and then you sent me a text and you and I talked for a while thereafter. And I said, but let's do this for public consumption. I'm devastated by what I'm seeing. I'm crushed. I love people. I've missed people. We've been in quarantine for 75 days. We haven't seen our friends and families in a lot of cases. I love people. I want a handshake. I want a hug. When I see people out on the streets, protest, yes, protest, but looting and violence. I can't believe what I'm seeing. What is going on in your heart and your mind right now?
Well, and I'll tell you, I hope I come across logically, because I'm still having a visceral reaction to all of this. And you know, I'm just going to get right into it. And I will tell you, Zad, as you know, because we've spoke many times, I couldn't be more proud to be a police officer, particularly a San Diego police officer for 35 years and retiring as the chief of police. And one of the things that I love the most about being a police officer is that you had an opportunity every single day to make a positive difference in someone's life, and usually at the worst possible moment. Regrettably, what is equally true is that as a police officer, you can destroy the years of hard work that it took to build the trust of our community in just mere moments. And when I saw what happened to Mr. George Floyd, I was horrified. I was beyond belief. I was just so disturbed to my inner core. I, like I said, a visceral reaction to it, and I still do. And I don't even want to call them police officers, those former police officers and what they did, but we can't shy away to who they were and the badge that they wore and what that means to our law enforcement profession. But what they did was wrong in every sense of the word, in every sense of human decency. There's no justification. It makes no sense. There's no reason. There's no excuse for what happened. And to those three officers that didn't step in and stop this, they should be held equally accountable. I watched this, as far as I'm concerned, it was a murder. But what I saw happen after this, and you have to understand, after this, and I've never seen this before, you literally had thousands of police officers, from chiefs to rank and file. I mean, Chief Neslite, Sheriff Gore, myself, so many others, and throughout the country, thousands of law enforcement police officers going publicly, unions, associations, saying this is wrong. This is absolutely wrong, and denouncing it. We feel betrayed as police officers because of the hard work that we have put into this. And when you talk about betrayal, so let's go to those protests, peacefully protests, yes. And the majority of what we've seen, you know, particularly here, has been peaceful. But to those few, and they're not protesters, to those few individuals with their own agenda, okay, that is trying to rob this opportunity to really come together and unite and have meaningful reform and to continue to move forward, because we've done a lot of great work here in San Diego, and to continue to move forward, they're trying to take that. Let's not let them do that. Let all of us unite. And I'm just going to say this, you know, I teach now at National University, and I like to think I'm a student of history. I went back and I read the second inaugural address of President Abraham Lincoln. And what got me thinking about that is that last year I had the privilege and the honor to help escort about 100 of our World War II and our Korean War veterans to see, so they can see their memorials. And we're at the Lincoln Memorial, and we're reading this. And here I'm standing with these veterans, and we're reading the words of President Lincoln and other people that were there, just everyday people that were there of all races. They start to listen to our discussion. And it's one of the things that I had said. I said, you know, look at his words, how wisdom and just amazing they were. And he's writing this in the waning days of the Civil War. And I said, in the struggles of that, where he talks about uniting a country, we're still dealing with those words. But let's look at these words, what he says, when he talks about we must unite. Malice toward none, charity towards all. And I went back and I read that. And the words are just as wise today as they were when he wrote it, President Lincoln. So we need the thought leaders. We need, and it's the majority of the people, I'll tell you right now, that want to unite all of us together. And don't let those few hijack it. This is our opportunity to make history.
Let me ask you this, Shelley. First of all, you started with, you think that those cops, the one with his knee on the neck, and the other three that we now see the reverse angle of all four of them on this man's body, you're like so many other police chiefs and former police chief around the country that are, they're blatantly calling this murder. Many of us have this notion that cops protect other cops. And when we hear you say that's murder, that's not you saying, hey, let's find out what happened. That's you saying what I see is murder and all four are responsible. Why is there, and believe me, there's so much to where I'm going in this conversation, and the other guys want to jump in as well, but why are police chiefs willing to jump out now and say these kinds of things when, again, our perception is that cops protect other cops?
Well, I'll tell you, everything is evolving. Everything, I don't think that definitely wouldn't have happened when I came on 37 years ago now. Wouldn't have happened 10 years ago. Wouldn't have happened 5 years ago. But is happening now, because this is the reform. This is the mindset of working together, that we call it out when we see it. We, you know, and that's what you're seeing. And that's the progress of what you're seeing. And nobody likes a bad cop, you know, more, you know, worse than a good cop. The good cops hate the bad cops. And you see that. And I will tell you, speaking in San Diego PD, more officers that spoke up about what is wrong. When I was chief, I put a sign on my desk. And here's what the sign said: bad news, welcome here. To create a culture of people feel comfortable, officers, professional civilian staff feel comfortable to come and tell you bad news. Because if you don't know about it, how do you ever fix it?
See, the thing is, after we see George Floyd die last week on the ground, on the streets of Minneapolis, protesting should happen. Yeah. I'm all for protesting. I've seen million man marches be very, very pleasant, because everybody's there with an agenda and everybody wants to make their voice heard. Now, when I see the violence, and I'm just shocked. I mean, I'm absolutely shocked. But then I hear the media reports. I made the terrible mistake all weekend of being in front of a TV and being in front of social media. When I hear the reports that the good people, the people whose heart are in the right place, like, this guy died, we want our voices heard. The peaceful protesters are one group, but a very small minority of people are the people that are creating the looting, the violence, the destruction of business and so on. I made the admission this weekend, I don't care how stupid I look, I've never heard of a group called Antifa. I started calling friends in law enforcement saying, is this common knowledge? Do you guys know about this? What I want to ask you is, are you saying, because I'm not sure I understand the news yet, I'm not sure I understand the groups and who they are for and who they're against, is, as a law enforcement officer, is a group called Antifa on the radar? And is it your belief that it is groups like these that are coming in, inspiring, paying for, et cetera, paying to create chaos? Would you explain that from your perspective? Because I'm very confused, and I'm happy to admit that that's the case.
Yeah, no, we're familiar with that group. We're familiar with other groups. You know, time will tell to see exactly who, if it was coordinated. Time will tell. I don't have the answer to that for last night or La Mesa. I don't have that answer as to exactly who. But we are very familiar with that group, and you have seen them, you know, take over protest and commit the acts of violence. But I'll tell you this: whatever group it is, it could be or an individual. If that's why you came to a protest, was to cause issues, no, we can't allow it to happen. That's the way I look at it. It doesn't matter what the group was. It doesn't matter if it was an individual. If you came to cause harm, to cause criminal acts, that cannot be tolerated, period. And I will tell you, you know, social media, the good, the bad, and the ugly, a lot of these things are sometimes coordinated. A lot of these things are spontaneous, but they multiply quickly because of social media and being able to get that word out. Nothing would surprise me as far as something was organized, but I don't have any information on that. But I do want to say, again, very proud of our San Diego Police Department, the coordination of other police departments. Last night, yes, there was you know, broken windows. Yes, there was some looting. Yes, there was tagging. But you didn't see the massive destruction that you saw even in La Mesa, or what we've seen across our country. And that's because of the professionalism of how we approach this situation. You can't let it get out of hand. And I'll tell you this, you know, you had some on social media saying they shouldn't have done this, they shouldn't have done that. There'll all be time to take a look at all of this. We learn from everything. You know, every day I would take a look at, and I still do it, you know, how did I do today? Is there something that I can improve on? And that's how you do get better. But we need unifying voices, and to have people that put out tweets to say, you know, because either they're watching it on TV or they're have one little perspective in their little area. As the, you know, incident commander of major protests when I was the chief of police, and as a rookie officer, you know, standing in the line and throughout my career, you don't have the full picture as to what's going on and the dynamics of if you're not in that command post. And that's important too. So, you know, during these type of situations, we need unifying leadership and not things that divide us.
What I would like to know is, going forward, how are we going to fix this problem? And my plan is, and I talked to John about it here, and I know he wants to jump in, and Alex does too. My thought is, this is time, you just said it, for leadership, for positive voices. I don't mean for bullshit. I mean for like real positive, you know, let's find a solution. Now, I don't know what all the problems are, but one problem seems to me is that when officers, like these four officers, when they don't have enough human sense, forget about police officer sense or common sense, just freaking human sense. If you don't know that 8 minutes into this thing, this guy's been passed out for 3 minutes and he's subdued and we can get off of him now, if you don't know that, then there's something wrong, it would seem to me, in the training of officers. Again, I have this perception. You went to Ohio State. You graduated from college and became a cop. I have this sense that the average cop is not like that, isn't college educated per se. Maybe I'm way off here. My question is, how do you increase the quality of human being who wants to be a cop? They're underpaid. It's a dangerous job. It's certainly not something I ever wanted to do. I'm just curious, how do we go about fixing the, what I'm putting in quotes, the cop part of this problem?
Yeah, you know, I have a lot of thoughts on that. First of all, what those officers did, no police officer, they had no heart. I'm not sure any amount of training would have changed what they did. I mean, oh my, you looked at that, and I'm looking at that, I go, no amount of training is going to change that. They were bad. They were, and the question is, do they hire bad? Do they become bad? You know, again, I have so many thoughts, and we do a lot of training here. We do a lot. It's, you know, and again, I always tell people, don't lump us all together. We're not perfect. You know, we have all of us can improve. All of us can improve. But you have to hire right. I tell you, you have to hire right. You know, there was even some talk, you know, here some wanted to lower our standards. And I know as chief, you know, and Mayor Faulkner backed me 1,000% was, no, we're not going to lower our standards to fix our recruitment problem. You know, so you have a lot of different philosophies. I wish I had the answer for you, because as I'm watching those four officers, and I think that's what I'm struggling with so much, because I feel so betrayed for our profession, it's senseless. I can't make sense out of it. And here's what hurts so much too, and I just want to get this off my chest. We become police officers, majority of us, vast majority of us, because we do want to make a positive difference in the lives of our community. When we become a police officer, and we take that oath, and we put the badge over our hearts, we hear the heartbeat of our entire community. It's our responsibility to go out and protect society, often the most humble and vulnerable amongst us. And that's a privilege that we willingly accepted when we became police officers. And that was not shown when we saw that. And I guess that's why I'm just so upset about all this. And I'm sure you can hear it in my voice, because so many years of hard work, you know, here in San Diego and across the country. And like I said, you have thousands of law enforcement professionals speaking out, which never would have happened before, against this. And we all feel betrayed. And here's the thing. We have to lift up our good police officers. We have to make sure that we support our good police officers. Because like I said, nobody, you know, good cops hate bad cops more than anyone. And we have to support our good cops.
Well, we all come at this with different experiences. John, I know you and I, we go back and forth a lot, because we see issues as very black and white. And one of the things I love about having John as part of our show is that it gives us a chance to really explore and discuss these issues, because, you know, I didn't live this experience. I didn't live this life. John, you watched all of this weekend. You're a dad with a little baby. You've come from a tough part of you know, Chicago. You've lived here in San Diego. We're all experiencing a lot of things that we're seeing and hearing for the first time, but this isn't one of them, because Martin Luther King Jr. was happening in the 60s. And Shelley, you're talking about Abraham Lincoln 200 plus years ago. Brown, jump in. What do you make of all this?
I think I have a question for Chief Zimmerman, and I'm pretty sure she can answer it, but it's a complex question, but I'll try to make it very simple. I think most of the outrage you're seeing across the country is because of the lack of arrest of all four of those officers. If the four of us had done that to any person on the street and it had been recorded, they'd have tracked all four of us down and put all four of us in jail. How is it that when a crime is so blatant and so on display, can't they do the simple things of arresting all four of these men and having them make bail like the officer who's being charged with third degree murder did? Where are the other three? I know you don't know where they are, but how can it be that these officers cannot be treated as regular citizens in an action like this?
You know what my answer is? I agree with you. We were asking the same questions. Why weren't they taken into custody? I don't have that answer. I wish I had the answer. I don't have that answer. And I think, again, you would have never heard chiefs and rank and file saying that. I will tell you, over the last couple of days, I've spoken to police chiefs. I've spoken to officers across our country. I've spoken to so many of our community members. And I want to say this. Thank you to, God, it must be at least 40 community members that reached out to me personally to say, hey, thinking about you, Chief, thinking about Jachelle, I know how much this must upset you. And we had some really great conversations. And that meant so much to me because it shows the friendship that we have and the trust that was built up over the years that they thought to reach out to me because they knew I would be hurting. God, I love you. You know, I love that.
The people in charge of that investigation said the investigation is ongoing. What does that mean for people who don't understand that? Because obviously they're still out there. If they're still investigating them and we're almost a week into this, why would it take so long? What part of the investigation that is it that we don't understand that is so complex that it takes them a week when it seems as if it's very easy to identify what happened?
Yeah, there is a lot of complexity to investigations.
Can you break some of that down for us?
Well, I don't know how much time we have. It would take a long time because when you think about when you're going to go to a criminal trial, you know, going to be charged criminally. And, you know, I would imagine the FBI is looking at this, very much looking at federal civil rights violations and other things. You want to make sure that you do everything by the book. The last thing, because let's face it, they're going to get attorneys. And if something wasn't done by the book, that's going to be an out to say, well, look at, you know, let's throw out this piece of evidence. Let's throw out that. So it's important to do a very thorough, methodical investigation. But go back to your first question. Why weren't they in jail immediately? I don't have that answer. I think they should be. I don't have that answer, but as far as doing an investigation, has to be done right. And it's important to be done right. So if it does go to trial, they could plead guilty. They could, so I don't know what's going to happen down the road, but thinking it will go to trial, you better have it done correctly. They got to get warrants. They got to get, you know, whatever that they're going to be looking at. Do it right. So there's no outrage because of some loophole that you couldn't go for one charge where you have to now go for another because you're going to throw out a piece of evidence. So kind of a short answer for a very complex on why things take time. And we should want them to do it right to make sure that they're held accountable.
As your time in police chief, you had situations here where officers used force and some people lost their lives. How did you deal with it at the time when you were in the position?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, one of the things that with San Diego is, you know, when we had body cameras, we were the first major police department in city across our country to deploy body cameras. I'm proud of that. And, you know, I will tell you, there was some that came to me and said, boy, chief, you know, there's no other major department that has, this is new technology. You're going to be the big person taking this on in the big city and the big department. You're going to take every hit that comes with trying to deploy something like this. Are you sure you want to do it? And my response, yes, that's what leaders do. And I'm not afraid to do it. Now, do we have some growing pains? Absolutely. Did I get, you know, beat up over it? Absolutely. But that's okay. You have to have the courage to, as a leader, to go forward. As I say all the time, I don't have the answers for everything, but together, collectively, we're going to have a lot more. What I'm also proud of is when we brought so many diverse groups together because we knew we were going to need a policy and a strong policy on this body camera, we had a 95% agreement on our first body camera policy. You can't get a 95% agreement with your best friend on where you're going to dinner tonight. Because how we approached it is that we all want the same thing, okay? We want to hold officers accountable. At the same time, we want to protect officers against, you know, false complaints. It's not an either or, it's a both. We want to do all of that. Now, I would tell you that 5%, we weren't going to agree, but that's okay because we learned from it. And, you know, the policy has been modified at least 3 times because I know I did it a couple times when I was chief. We don't necessarily have all the answers on day one, but let's not derail things because we don't have all the answer on day one. That was very meaningful progress. And so, you know, let me tell you, if you're not aware, and this is on the website, the San Diego Police Department website, of the checks and balances that go into what you asked about, you know, if there was an officer involved shooting. First thing that we do is that we start a criminal investigation, okay? Then that investigation, goes to internal affairs. Well, the criminal investigation gets sent to the district attorney's office. District attorney's office then will make a decision if they're going to charge or not charge the officer. Then goes to internal affairs where they look at policy, potential policy violations. It also goes to our training department to take a look at training tactics. The entire investigation, including every interview, every body camera video, every piece of evidence, is looked at through our independent citizen review board on police practices. The FBI has an opportunity to take a look at that body cam or at that investigation to see if they're going to look at a civil rights violation. The video evidence, and we did this unanimously across San Diego County long before any, you know, assembly bill or Senate bill. On the release of video evidence unanimously, and we evolved with that also, because we always learn new things and try to improve, is we would put the release of the video evidence out there. The district attorney did that. Bonnie DeManis, when I was chief, did that, and then now Silver Stefan. And, you know, we talked a lot about it, and I would tell you, when I met with community groups and hundreds of community members talking about this and talking about the body cameras, and they were helping us with the policy, and then I'm talking about how we're going to do a responsible release of the video evidence. And at first there was like, you're not going to do that, chief. You know, really, you're telling us that you're going to do that, but we're watching what happens in Chicago, and it took, you know, a year or 2 years to release evidence there or video evidence there. I said, no, we're going to expedite that release of that video evidence because that will help build the trust to our community. And that's exactly what we did. And they saw that that's exactly what we did, and we got it done in a pretty quick, methodical, you know, make sure that the investigation was thorough, and we did it. And that helped to build trust of our community. So it goes back to what you said and everybody's talking about. This was years of hard work and helping to build the trust of our community. And that's why we're all so hurt, because we've made some real progress. We're not done, nobody's claiming victory, but we've made some real progress, and to have it derailed and our badge tarnished. So what we have to do, we gotta quadruple our efforts. And you know what? I'm up for the challenge. Are you up for that challenge? Let's get everybody up for that challenge to unite.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to figure something out, because our country this weekend, I've never seen anything quite like it in my life. I mean, I was scared for people. I mean, I really was. All right. So, Chief, this is, I can hear what you're saying in terms of, you know, I'll give you an example. After 9/11, people hailed the NYPD as heroic. This past weekend, you see an NYPD car drive into a crowd and start pushing a crowd through barricades. Then all of a sudden, to your point, they were heroes in 9/11. Now they're bad guys. And so I understand, but let me ask you your opinion on this. A lot of the people that we've heard from that were in La Mesa, these are civilians. Their argument is everything was peaceful. And then the cops shot a woman with a rubber thing and it got stuck in between her eyes. I don't know if you've seen this picture or not.
I did see it, yeah.
So again, I just want to get your reaction. I wasn't there. What people say, things were peaceful and the cops are what turned things violent. When you hear that, what is your thought on it? And is it something that you think is possible / reasonable? Based on these witness reports, what do you think about that?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, everybody's going to have their own perception and reality of what they saw. Okay, so if you're standing right there and you saw that and you thought there was no justification, that's what you believed at that moment. Again, you know, you don't necessarily know what happened somewhere else. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. I saw the aftermath. I saw the picture. I don't know what happened. But what I do know is being an incident commander in a command post, and I spoke about this a little earlier, is that someone said, you know, it was completely peaceful. I will tell you is that something must have been happening other if that person did not see in order for that to start deploying either tear gas or something else.
But if they're firing into a crowd, what type of tactical training would result in an officer firing into a crowd blankly and hitting a person who had nothing to do with what they may or may not have actually been firing at? I think that's the problem where people don't understand from a police, because I'm trying to understand it from a police officer's perspective. At what point would it was probably unruly. People were probably yelling at police officers. But if at that point there's no violence, there's no destruction of anything, there's no breaking of windows, why would you fire tear gas into an already agitated crowd to make things worse?
Well, again, it's important to remember that is what one person has said was happening at the time. You don't know what might have been happening, you know, behind you because you're not looking behind
right.
You. You don't know what's happening somewhere else. So it is crowd, certainly crowd dynamics. There is different levels of crowd dynamics and different responses as to what you do. Again, with the big picture, you don't necessarily know that there wasn't vandalism or officers being assaulted somewhere else. Order to disperse was given. Then if there's no dispersal, then you do then you do a follow-up as to what you're going to do. And it's important, again, the whole goal is to keep it as peaceful as possible. And that's why you do give dispersal orders. So we saw that picture. I saw that picture. And to look at that, you're like, this person did nothing. I understand why people would say that, but it's a bigger picture as to what is happening. And again, with not being in the command post, I can't tell you, but I can only speak from my own personal, when I handle these incidents as the chief of police, there was a lot of dynamics going on when we gave orders to, deploy tear gas or orders to take something other decisions that were made. And, you know, a lot of that goes down to the field commander on the scene that is seeing things also in the command post, what is going on. And the whole goal is to keep it peaceful.
So they're told to fire. This is not just one person, individual who feels like they see something, then they fire. The command to fire comes from a tower or from someone else?
No, I mean, it's again, that usually that, I can't speak for, I wasn't there, but direction is given as to how we handle these types of protests. And that decision could come from the commander that is right there on the scene, or it could come in consultation with the command post. It's not a one size fits all. Again, you know, I know a lot of people are just looking for a black and white answer here. A lot of times there's no black and white answer. It's a lot of these decisions that are made because of what you know that is happening in one area or another area, but in a bigger picture of what's going on. And that's what we need to realize. There's a bigger picture than what you are just seeing in the person right in front of you.
I just have one general question about, I guess, tactics of controlling a protest, because it's a little confusing when you watch, like, for example, in Huntington Beach a couple weeks ago, people were protesting to open things back up again. And there was thousands of people on the streets of Huntington Beach. And there was really very, very little police, presence there. So, Mike, I guess my question is, why is such a large amount of police presence required when it comes to like a Black Lives Matter protest? It seems like the protests are giant numbers on both of them, but why is there such police presence, for example, like in San Diego, in La Mesa, or in downtown?
Yeah, and I'll answer it this way. You know, we're watching what goes on in other areas of the country. We're watching what goes on around here. When you saw the protests of because people wanted to open up, you know, a beach or something like that, it's very, very calm. There was no graffiti. There was no destruction of property. There was no banks that were burned down over that. And when we're watching what's going on, you know, you have to be prepared. And I'll talk about when, it's not a political statement, but I'll talk about when candidate Trump came here, you know, back when I was chief of police, and you saw what was happening in other cities, that, you know, fights breaking out, fires, you know, cities are actually telling them not to come because they don't think that they can handle all the major protests. And so we put a plan together here, and I was very vocal about it, that we would support, help facilitate peaceful protests. That's our philosophy. That hasn't changed. But when you start to get destruction of property, when you start to get violence, you cannot allow that to happen. And so that's why you see a difference. You have to be prepared. But as you know, you saw for hours just yesterday, hours, that it was very peaceful. But that changed. And it goes back to what I talked about before. Let's not let these few rioters, not protesters, let's not let these few rioters hijack this moment for meaningful change.
I have to respectfully disagree with you on this point. The protest in Huntington Beach did not have a heavy police presence. And you said that wasn't as, I'm going to use the term energetic, but at the same time, during the day, the protests here, the protests across the country, during the day, those were of spirit, of voices being heard. And there was a heavy police presence. And I think that causes the agitation. I guess what I'm trying to say is, I honestly believe that if these protests get the same amount of attention from a police perspective as the one in Huntington Beach did, or the ones at the state capitol where these guys are carrying assault rifles, you would not have the pushback from the people in the street, because they see cops as agitation, because the cops are why people are in the street. And so when you find yourself in a situation surrounded by police officers and you're just trying to have your voice heard, and you just watched for 2 weeks in a row people in Huntington Beach get the same opportunity, people in Michigan with assault rifles on state capitals get the same opportunity, but you can't get the same opportunity, you see a problem in that. And that problem, unfortunately, rests on the shoulders of the police.
Well, Shelley, I appreciate,
if I could respond, Scott, for that.
Go ahead. I'm curious also. I have another. Go ahead, please, feel free.
Well, and I appreciate that, you know, what you're saying there. And remember, we're there to protect the First Amendment right to assemble. We're there to protect that you can do that. And to the earlier conversation about some of these groups don't necessarily want the protesters that were there for legitimate reasons to protest. We have to make sure that we provide that safe environment so they can protest peacefully. We shut down streets, we let them march, and that takes personnel to do that. So, you know, and I love this dialogue because, you know, the only way that we're gonna explain this and, you know, let it know from the different perspectives is to have this very civil dialogue. So thank you for bringing up that point. I love that you brought that up. And so that's the goal, is to be there to make sure that you're not interfered with, the peaceful protesters.
Yeah, it's so interesting though, because the way you guys both asked the question, Alex asked it like, and the way I heard it was, you have a black issue. A black man was killed on the streets of Minneapolis. It's a Black America is furious with police officers. And by the way, lots of white Americans are also furious. Okay. So the question was asked in a way that made it sound to me like, why is it that at a black protest, there needs to be a tremendous amount of police presence. But at a, and I'm putting this in quotes, at a white protest, meaning, hey, we're flying American flags and we all want America to open up. You're holding us back from being free. That looked like a white protest. This looked like a black protest. The white protest, perception-wise, didn't seem to have as much police presence, and the black protest seemed to have a lot of police presence. But see, I jump in and I ask it like this. If you're in San Diego, you've already seen what's going on in Minneapolis, Atlanta, Chicago, LA, New York. So it would occur to me that the reason you have all these cops in downtown San Diego, even when it's peaceful by day, is to prepare for what happens when it turns nighttime and we expect things to get a little out of control. I guess, did I hear the way you asked it, right, Alex? I mean,
that's what it is. And I think whether you see it that way or don't, I think a lot of people in America are seeing it that way right now. White people that were doing that in Huntington Beach get to do that without being threatened by police presence. That's just the way it's perceived by me. I could be wrong, but maybe by John as well, it sounds like. That's what it looks like. It looks like, because it's a black issue, that there's so many police officers, because you're expecting a riot, you're expecting violence, you're expecting that. But in Huntington Beach, you're not expecting that because they're white. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, and I appreciate you expressing yourself like that. And that's where we talk about race relations and not just hearing somebody, but you know, or listening, but really hearing what you're saying. And what I said, and I'm listening and I'm hearing. And what I said was, when you brought up the Huntington Beach because they wanted to go back on their beach and go sit down on their beach, you didn't see any violence, you know, across the country with that. You saw people protesting, but I didn't see any fires being sent over that. But while I'm watching what's going on in this, in other cities, you do see fires. You do see assaults. You do see overt criminal acts. And here, as a law enforcement official, I'll talk again about, you know, back, you know, the Trump rap. And, you know, you have to make sure that that doesn't happen here. Go back to Ferguson. I was the chief during Ferguson. You didn't see our city burn like you saw other cities. And part of that was because we did have a lot of officers that were out there to help facilitate those marches. Like yesterday, we needed police officers to help march, to reroute traffic. And we did that. So we were there to protect the First Amendment right of assembly, of free speech. But we also have to be prepared, because we've seen what can happen just a night ago in La Mesa if we don't work together and don't respond quickly to the unrest that we saw across.
Shelley, before you go, I want to ask one last question. I have noticed that there's so much coverage, obviously. Everybody could notice this. I have seen the most disgusting things I've ever seen in my life. I saw a guy in Oregon get attacked. He's carrying an American flag. He gets attacked, white man, gets attacked by a whole bunch of other white guys. Apparently, they're all part of this group that I'd never heard of. And then one guy comes in to try and help, like break it up, and he's helping the guy that's being attacked. Now he's being chased. He falls flat on his face and is out cold. And some little punk just comes up and kicks him right in the face. And I mean, like, takes a long run and kicks him right in the face. I mean, the brutal, disgusting violence that I've seen, it just nauseates me. But so much of this is caught on camera. You can freeze frame it. You can enlarge it. You can see people's faces. Does law enforcement now go after people who were the looters, who did steal? Oh, yeah. Okay, talk us through that.
Yeah. There's no doubt in my mind, and we'll work with our community because we can't allow that to happen. And like I said, we can't allow these few that came there to cause problems and to hijack what we're all trying to do here to unite and move forward. So yes, and they must be held accountable, because if they're not, then it just empowers them to do it again the next night and the next night. And, you know, I would tell you, I saw also some wonderful things that was put out there too. You know, our police officers fist bumping and hugging some of the protesters and having real conversation with them. And that's, you know, quote Martin Luther King, it's hard to hate up close. And that's why we have to continue to have this dialogue and not draw that line in the sand. Let's find that common ground. Doesn't mean we're going to agree on everything, but let's find that common ground. Because one thing we can, good people, can agree on is that everybody should have the right to enjoy the freedom safely in our the most beautiful city in the world, right here in San Diego. So let's take all of us, all of our thought leaders, all of the different, what you're feeling. Thank you for sharing that with me. It's important. And keep sharing that. It's important. And I know you're listening to me and the different, you know, what we're dealing with and how we go about doing it. And I'll tell you, you know, it's a tough job. That's why I commend San Diego PD, the other officers last night. As bad as we saw with some of that, you know, the graffiti, so many buildings that were tagged and you know, some looting and the broken windows. We didn't see the destruction that we did see in other cities, and that's because of all of us working together and preventing that. Because if those officers didn't prevent that, if they didn't, you know, set a tone earlier in the day that they weren't going to allow, can't allow the unlawful acts. We're there to protect our community's First Amendment right to assemble for free speech. And we will be right there making sure that you have that opportunity to do that peacefully. And for those that want to come to our city and say and commit the unlawful acts, we have to all also stand together and say, we can't allow that.
Shelley, thank you for the time today. I'm so glad we've shared all of this. And I want to say to you, and I think, guys, tell me if you disagree, but we want to be there to help. I have always wanted to be there to help when it comes to these types of issues. You know that when it comes to police versus community issues, we've always thought of our broadcast as being influential in trying to help. We want to continue. Whatever it is that you think that we can do to be helpful, please call upon us, because you have three guys here from very different experiences, as you can hear, you know, also very different perceptions of things. And if we can share and communicate and actually talk about these things rather than being so fearful, like, oh, I can't say this because they're going to call me a racist. I mean, people legitimately said, if you don't endorse all of the looting that's going on, you're a racist. I'm like, hey, here, let me explain it to you. I don't endorse looting. I don't endorse hurting other people's businesses or their property or their physical body. If that's what a racist is today, I guess that's me. I'm not. I'm just somebody who cares about lots of people, all people. And whatever it is that we can do together, you call on us, we'll call on you, because this is not going away tomorrow or next week. This isn't getting flushed in the news cycle. This is going to be a part of our lives going forward.
And, you know, and good, because we need to continue to communicate. We need to continue. You know, all of us need to really try to understand and listen and find that common ground. And I'll tell you, I couldn't, like I said, I appreciate you giving me this forum to say these things. And all of us need to, you know, make sure that we move our city forward in a meaningful and productive manner and not let these this terrible tragedy, murder of Mr. George Floyd and what we saw with the few that wanted to destroy property and commit violence act. We can't allow that. We have to continue to work together as thought leaders to move forward and not let people that just want to divide us.
Amen to that, sister. Next time, hopefully we'll be talking about better things, you know?
Thank you.
All right, there you go. I mean, long conversation, but it's really, really relevant on a day like today. You'll notice, by the way, that I'm not mentioning sponsors today. I'm not mentioning other things related to sports. I could talk about baseball if it's coming back. I could, you know, talk about the NBA. I mean, whatever. None of that stuff matters today. Sponsors, I will make it up to you. I promise you. Everybody knows. You can see the TVs in the background. For those of you that are listening, you know our sponsors. You know the great work that they do. But on a day like today, today's not the day to promote sponsors. It's a day to try and work on putting our lives, our country, our feelings out there and try and make a difference in some way. I hope that Shelley Zimmerman did. And by the way, I think both of you guys did a phenomenal job of being honest with her about where you're coming from. You know, because if she doesn't hear that from you guys and she just hears from me, she's not going to get a variety of perspectives. So outstanding work. What do you guys think?
I think the conversation was good. I think that it's always and she was very receptive to disagreement. It's always good when people are receptive to open to conversation about things they may not understand and from people they don't know, because you have no idea the struggles of a person until you hear from them. We can't all walk in each other's shoes, but we can hear each other's voices. And I think that's very important in a time like this.
Yep. I mean, cops have a difficult job. No one's saying they don't, you know, and she comes from it with 35 years of experience. She comes from it from, you know, doing the job for like doing a job that none of us ever thought about doing, you know.
God,
I would never sign up to be a cop. And
never.
You know, there's bad cops, there's great cops, there's good cops. You've seen it. So I just appreciate her being honest and giving her perspective, because me and Browner come from a different perspective. You come up from a different perspective. She comes from one. But the fact that you know you can have civil conversations and see what we can do going forward, that's what's important.
I want to use our platform, whether it's here digitally, because we can reach so many people. I mean, we have the potential to reach so many people using YouTube and Apple Podcast and Spotify and all these different platforms that we use. And then when we get back onto local radio, I want to use that again, as we have in the past, to be a voice of positivity, to be a voice of putting people together rather than tearing people apart. And so I just got to say, guys, I mean, this is just an emotional day. I mean, this may be on me. Maybe I spent too much time this past weekend watching television news
and playing
on social media, dude.
I didn't even watch any news, but I saw it everywhere, man. Like, it's not that you sat in front of your TV. It's everywhere, and it's good. You know, you shouldn't ignore it.
Right. Exactly. This is not the time to turn away. I think you watching that is good, because you feel some of what those people feel out there, whether it be negative or positive. But I think it's most important now that we do not look away, because we've looked away too many times. Let's let this, from a collective effort, be the last one. I know that's a difficult task. I'm not asking that we end racism, but we can end police brutality. We can get rid of excessive force when it ends in murder. I'm not saying cops should not save their own lives sometimes in the line of duty, because you better. Because if I was in your shoes, I would. But unarmed people dying in the hands of police because they are overly aggressive in their tactics, that can be stopped.
Can be and should be. And again, you talk about being a cop. I mean, honestly, like, I cannot imagine going to college and saying, hey, so what do you want to do for a living? I want to be a cop. And I, by the way, just to let you guys know, I had a roommate of mine who that's exactly what he did. He was like, hey, I'm going to college. I'm going to get a 4-year degree in criminal justice, and I plan on becoming a police officer. And he became a cop, and he put on a uniform, and he drove around in a squad car. And after a 20-plus year career, he's now a detective, and he's got a cushy job behind a desk. But, and I say it like that, it's probably dangerous. And by the way, it's taken him 20 years to go from through all that danger to get to that cushy job. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I have this perception that police officers are not the guys that are planning on getting their MBA, and they're not the guys that are planning on working on Wall Street. They're the guys and girls that are looking for, I want to make a steady living. I want to have a good career. I want to be able to eventually retire. I don't know that we're getting the officers. We're getting the enlisted. And it's just like military. Just really, it's just like military. You know, a lot of times we say about the United States military, we all celebrate the military, and we say they're the best of America. Well, guess what? A lot of the times, they're not the best of America. There are a lot of times where people in the military have done some really bad things, okay? And I don't mean in the battlefield. I just mean in regular life. And we have to kind of understand it's not all, it's some. But we can't shy away from the fact that there are great cops out there who want to work hard and build community. And then there are pieces of shit out there that did you see the New York City cop? They said flashed like a white, like a white supremacy,
a white power sign.
There again, I'm naive. I'm like, what the hell is that? Okay, great.
Yeah. Right? Remember, we had a conversation about this a while ago. Yeah,
had no idea. Had no, I thought this meant A-okay. Okay. Schmuck. Right. But just to finish my thought here is just look, we've got to be better in every way we can be better. If it means paying cops more, if it means hiring better quality human beings, if it means making the job more attractive, that people, you know, better quality people want to do it. I'm not trying to knock the 95% of cops that are good people. I'm trying to say that we've got to eliminate that those bad cops, those four cops in Minneapolis. There's something wrong with all those guys. Not just something wrong with their training. There's something wrong with them as humans.
I want to thank Shelley Zimmerman because she said something, and I didn't say this while she was here because it slipped my mind because I was thinking of something else. I want to thank her for not lowering the standards to be a San Diego police officer, because that is very, very important. I think that hiring practices and standards to be a police officer needs to be upgraded. And she made a very good point. She didn't know if they were bad or they turned bad. That's a very important thing too. But the standards of hiring police officers need to be stricter and they need to be higher. If you are fired because of excessive force, you should not be hired again.
Okay.
These are things that are not in the books for police officers. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know what else is one thing? Is you said it earlier. I thought you said it really, really well. More black men and women who would like to create change in this world should probably consider careers that, and I know it's easy for me to say, hey, black guy, black lady, go become a cop, go make change. I know it's real easy for me to be flippant about it, but I'm not trying to be, because I'll tell you one of the most emotional moments of the weekend. As much as I saw that white guy sheriff in Flint, Michigan saying, let's go, let's walk, and I thought that was incredibly emotional, there was a black officer, big giant dude. I'm talking like 6'6", 350.
In Atlanta.
Oh my God. And he said this, one by one, my brother, one by one. He kept saying it, one by one, my brother, one by one. Like, we'll make change one by one. We'll do it together, one by one. We'll get rid of bad cops, one by one. We'll love each other, one by one. I just kept hearing him say this. I was like, see, now there is a black man wearing a badge who has a job to do, who's obviously compassionate to the moment. I would love to see, to your point, run for mayor, run for city council, become a police officer. Get in the game so that you can make changes within, not from without, by breaking shit.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I want to say one last thing before we get out of here today. For those of you that had the courage, and I know most of you are locals, but for those of you that had the courage to show up in La Mesa on Sunday morning and clean up, God bless you people. Seriously. I thought about it. I really did. I was like, should I get my car and drive down there and help clean up and, you know, clean off the spray paint and sweep up the glass? And I never did. Okay. I admit it. I never did. But I see somebody like our former colleague at 1090, Craig Elston, who's from La Mesa, who lives down there, who showed up to clean up, to be part of that cleanup, because he's got pride in his community. And I just want to say to everybody who was part of that, congratulations, because that was another beautiful gesture. Our town got lit up last night. Let's go clean the mess. And I thought that was, you know, that's kind of some of the good news, if you will, that kind of comes out of this stuff. Communities coming together.
Shout out to Craig.
Yep. Shout out. Anybody have a final thought? Again, I'm not mentioning sponsors today. I'm going to tell you that James Blake is coming on tomorrow. I think James will be super interesting, and I want to progress this story as the days go on, because I think we got to be part. We, the three of us, everybody in YouTube, everybody in Facebook, everybody who shares this, everybody who pushes this to their friends, anybody who retweets our interview with Shelley Zimmerman, we together, we got to put it out there. We got to put the voice out there that we want to get better. We can't keep doing this. You know,
my final word is get in the game. It's okay to be mad. It's okay to voice your opinion. It's okay to march. But at some point, if you have enough energy to raise your voice, you have enough energy to register to vote, you have enough energy to run for office, you have enough energy to file to be a city council member, you have enough energy to attempt to become a police officer. All those things may not be for you, but one of them will be. And you need to practice more of that and less of breaking and less of burning, because someone worked hard for that thing that you burned.
Yeah, that was your parents, and their store got burned down. You know, I got it. It's Nike, and I got it. It's Adidas, and I got it. It's big brands like Vaughn's or Chase Bank gets burned to the ground. But I'm just telling you that, I don't know if you guys saw the video in Rochester, New York, of a woman standing out in front of her, like what looked like a small convenience store, saying, please don't attack our store. And these guys beat the ever living shit out of this woman. I mean, it's just, the violence is like I've never seen. I watch violence on Game of Thrones. I go, cool, his head got chopped off. When I'm seeing that stuff in real life, I mean, you know, serious violence of people getting hurt, I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you animals? Alex, final thought, anything?
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to end racial injustice today. But what you can end for yourself in your own life is just be kind to people. Whoever they are, whatever they are to you, just be kind to people. It's not hard. It's actually really easy. So that's all.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to end it right there. And I'm just going to say, hey, love everybody, man. I mean, just as best you can, just love everybody. And those people that bring hate, you know, that hate somebody because they're black or hate somebody because they're Jewish or hate somebody because they're Hispanic, we're not getting through to those people. We're not getting through. But believe me when I tell you, the vast majority of us love, you know, it's only a few that hate. And we'll just have to tolerate, you know, I guess at some point, I guess we got to tolerate these people because we can't just eliminate these people. But it's just sad, man. I'm just so broken up about what I saw in La Mesa. I'm broken up about the war of words that happens on social media. I'm just devastated by the hatred and the violence that I've seen this past weekend. And like I said, at the beginning, I wasn't sure how long we were going to be able to go. Shelley, I thought was really interesting, cause she comes at it from a police chief, female white perspective. And we come at it from our different ones as well. So guys, listen, have a great day as best you can. I hope everybody watching and listening, please, please just calm down out there. Okay. Please calm down out there before people start to really lots and lots and lots of people get hurt or worse. And we'll be back tomorrow with James Blake and we'll hopefully I say get back to normal. What's normal now? You know, does anybody care about coronavirus anymore? I mean, seriously, is coronavirus about to spread like 100 times faster because of everything that happened this weekend?
Yes.
We'll find out.
Hopefully not.
I know. Peace on the streets, everybody. We love you.